News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It's Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Welcome. It is Bowerly and Bellavia, News Radio 930 WBEN, and so much is going on in the world, I don't even know where to begin. But this Matt Lauer story, David, is absolutely, it's riveting and it is amazing in so many ways. Matt Lauer came out swinging after he was accused of raping one of his colleagues in Sochi at the Olympics.
You know, Matt Lauer is one of the probably the highest profile scalps that the Me Too movement took down. I mean, Harvey Weinstein being one of them. Matt Lauer, you know, Harvey Weinstein always had a reputation of being, you know, at least a public reputation of being a little bit of a gross guy. Nothing was really ever made reference to of you know, breaking the law, of course, but in the public eye. But Matt Lauer was, you know, he was our 9/11 anchor. He was the morning show guy, you know. So when these allegations came out, they were very damning, and he really took the high road. And I think, as you know, as a PR lesson here, I think a lot of these guys that are being accused are realizing that that silence is looked at as almost an admission of guilt. When Brett Kavanaugh was accused of all these horrible things, his reaction was totally different. He came out very offended, emotional, outraged that someone could make allegations against his character, against his professionalism. And it seemed to have worked, not only for the people that originally supported Kavanaugh, but a lot of people that were accusing Kavanaugh. Taking the high road when you're accused of sexual assault is, you know, is an admission that they're right. And so this time around, this book by Rowan Farrow, who's, of course, Woody Allen's stepson, when that, or I should say son, he took his mother's name. He's the one that's writing for The New Yorker. He's writing all these pieces on other actors. His new book comes out and details such gratuity of the alleged crimes against Matt Lauer that there's no way we could even go into detail on the air without disturbing many people. I mean, this is some really graphic sexual stuff. And Matt Lauer today said, you know what? This is it. I was silent 2 years ago. I'm not going to be silent anymore. And Tom, he goes into his own detail.
Oh, yeah.
Of everything he did with this woman. And it's certainly not suitable to discuss that here. But the amount of intestinal fortitude. Now, again, guilty or innocent, that's what a court determines. He's accused. It's alleged that he has done these things, but nobody, Kevin Spacey, you know, all the other names that we've heard, no one has done what Matt Lauer has done today. It almost appears like he's taken a lesson from Brett Kavanaugh to say, you want to get into details? Let's get into details.
Yeah, and in defending himself, Matt Lauer says, let's see, among other things, I admit I ended the affair poorly. I simply stopped communicating with her. I believe that would be called ghosting. He basically ghosted her. Lauer goes on to say, Brooke continued to reach out. She admitted to NBC at the time she filed her complaint that she called me late at night while I was home with my family in an effort to rekindle the affair. I mean, I'm sorry, David, but that doesn't sound like somebody who is a victim of a sex crime.
No, but it doesn't mean that they're not. You know, sometimes we see people with what seems to be strange behavior, but they are victims of sexual assault. I guess what it comes down to is the preponderance of the evidence, right? Do you take her to be credible and do you believe her story, or do you believe Matt Lauer's story? Here's what you know. Most people, when they're accused of something, deny everything and say that the court of law, he's accepting the fact that he was in a supervisor position. He had power over her. He never should have crossed the line. He did cross the line. He did have an affair with her. And he claims, and she claims, that the relationship actually continued for quite some time after this alleged rape had occurred at the Olympics.
Well, this is what Lauer says specifically, and I'll read this very, very carefully. She claims, speaking of Brooke Nevels, she claims our first encounter was an assault, yet she actually participated in arranging future meetings and met me at my apartment on multiple occasions to continue the affair. She says, I was the one pursuing the relationship, yet once it was over, she was the one calling me asking to rekindle it. She says she felt pressure to continue the affair because I had control over her career, but she did not work for me, the Today Show, or NBC News. She said she wanted to remain anonymous, yet she was reportedly trying to sell a book within a year after filing her complaint. She said she just wanted NBC to do the right thing, yet she sought a monetary payment, and 2 years after I was fired, she is stepping forward to do more damage. I mean, this is a guy who is clearly offended and on the offensive against these allegations.
You know, again, he really threw himself, you know, under the bus by admitting all that anyway. Not like you could do more damage to Matt Lauer at this point. He's not getting a job anywhere. Russia TV won't touch him, you know, to show you there's always a future for these broadcasters on Russia TV. No one wants this guy. And his career is essentially over. And whether or not it was sexual assault, it certainly violated almost every tenet of every business code of conduct you can imagine. You know, your CEO, your whoever is talking to a lower, you know, person that's in the company and they're engaged in this relationship, and that's obviously frowned upon. So he admits to all that. It comes down to, do you believe her? Do you believe him? But again, this is a new tactic that's used in this Me Too movement, where you have people that are just saying, look, I'll air everything. And I'm humiliated. What more damage can you do? Does Matt Lauer do this when the allegations are initially made?
No, he does not.
He does not do that. So he's like, I don't want this to come out. I'll just step down. I don't want it to come out what happened. I'm embarrassed. My family went through that very expensive divorce. This guy lost, you know, almost $50 million in his divorce. You know, he's now on TikTok with his 14-year-old daughter doing crazy dance moves, trying to resurrect some semblance of likability. And then this book comes out, of course, and it's, you know, X's and O's into his sexual encounters. And she's claiming, of course, that these were, you know, against her will, and that somehow he had psychological power over her to make her want to continue this relationship out of fear that she would lose her job and her position.
Yeah, Lauer says in this open letter that old stories are being recycled, titillating details are being added. He admits he did have an extramarital affair with Brooke in 2014. And here's what Matt Lauer says about the beginning, and I will edit this for decorum's sake. Let's see. It began when she came to my hotel room very late one night in Sochi, Russia. We engaged in a variety of sexual acts. We performed blank sex on each other. We had blank sex. We had blank sex. Each act was mutual and completely consensual. But here's what I guess I'm lost on this, David, because it seems to me that the preponderance of evidence, i.e. Her behavior after she was allegedly assaulted, kind of supports Matt Lauer's version of the event.
Well, on its surface, it does. But we do have documented cases where people that have been exposed to sexual assault over a period of time, their self-esteem goes down the drain. They feel controlled. And they go back to what is obviously, you know, horrible behavior because for whatever reason, psychologically, because of the abuse. This, we do have those stories as well. In this circumstance, though, you know, is that a high percentage of sexual assault victims? Certainly not, right? Certainly the larger percentage of sexual assault victims are assaulted. They acknowledge it. They go forward or they keep it quiet, but they don't go back. They don't voluntarily go back to. You know, you could make the argument that if someone goes to your apartment and they have power over you, that they're pushing, you know, the objective there. If you're going to someone's apartment that's sexually assaulting you, it's harder. Let's just be honest. It's harder to defend that behavior as being a sexual assault when you're the one showing up at someone's apartment at 2 a.m.
And when you're the one trying to rekindle the affair once it was over because Matt Lauer ghosted you. I mean, this is Lauer's version of the story. He stopped communication with her.
Well, that's actually her version of the story, too. I mean, there's not a lot of the only discrepancy is whether or not it was an assault and whether it was a rape or not. But again, this is really the problem with the Me Too movement, is that the ambassadors that they have chosen. Look, I could throw a dart out the window and hit someone in Hollywood that has had some casting couch horrible thing happen to them. But damn it, if they didn't choose every single person that has really confusing, conflicted versions of what happened with Harvey Weinstein. I mean, every one of these women have a version of their story that is, I called him up at 2 a.m. because I wanted this part. And so this thing I did on my own. The other three, he took advantage of me. And that's just too cloudy for a jury. I think it's too cloudy for the American public. And it's so odd because there are so, well, if I hear the statistics from Me Too, if I believe them, you would see that there are so many people that just have black and white cases where they were victims of sexual assault. Why not use them for these lawsuits? Why do we have these victims that are so confusing? Because a jury is going to sit down and they're going to carry their baggage into that courtroom and their experiences, and it's a crapshoot. And it's one of the reasons why Kevin Spacey walked, you know, in what was supposed to be a black and white sex assault case. Kevin Spacey, you know, won that case in Massachusetts. And now we have all these other ones where we're seeing that they can't get jury decisions on them because there's so much confusion in the story of why did you go back?
Right.
Why did you call them back? Why did you try to pursue a relationship with someone who took advantage of you?
And if I was sitting on a jury, that would weigh very heavily in my determination in a criminal situation as to whether somebody was a rapist, or in a civil situation, whether somebody is entitled to damages.
And that's the problem. Now, we're not saying that that's not something that happens to sexual assault victims. That could very well be a legitimate cause where it's like you think you brought this on yourself, or you think that, you know, you don't have the self-esteem to stand up and say, I deserve to be treated better. All of these things are legitimate, you know, but it can't be every single person that goes to trial has that, you know, that situation on you know, when it's over. That you can't do that because it just seems like there's a lot of crazy out there. And let's be honest, a lot of these stories have been, for every person that R. Kelly is alleged to have been with, or Bill Cosby, there were still people that showed up there as imposters. Tiger Woods had a tremendous amount of women that came out, but there were six or seven of them that turned out to be not true and lying. Donald Trump, you know, he had 23 women parade out. Now, where are they now? Their stories, you know, so there are legitimate victims of sexual assault and they deserve justice and people to defend them. But there are liars out there that are ruining people's character and they're jumping on the bandwagon. And that's criminal behavior as well.
I mean, the implications of this are really enormous because basically anybody a guy has ever dated could step forward and say, well, you know, yes, I had a year-long affair with him, but the one occasion it was definitely an assault. The one occasion it was definitely rape because I was drunk. I mean, whom do you believe? Do you believe him? Do you believe her?
Here's the thing. I would believe, first of all, we don't, you know, again, who do we believe? That's what juries are for.
Right,
that's,
but I mean, what I'm saying here is that
right.
Anybody could be charged with sexual assault by a woman scorned, by a man scorned,
listen,
or whatever.
They would be much better served if you got a jury verdict on Matt Lauer for the, you know, thousands of things he's been accused of. Locking the door, I couldn't get out.
Which he denies,
but he still had a lock on his door that was manipulated from the desk. Whether that came from NBC corporate, what that was used for, that work order, it does exist.
Well, Lauer says there was no such device on the door of his office, and he could not have kept anybody in his office even if he'd wanted to. That's what he says in his open letter.
Well, you know, again, going with the New Yorker story and going with the other evidence that came from NBC corporate, there were offices that did have that capability. Whether or not Matt Lauer's office had that or not, that's his claim. You know, again, I haven't seen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you what's true and what isn't true. I'm just saying these are the allegations that are out there. Now, if he had a conviction against him, Bill Cosby has a conviction against him, right? Now you're more prone to believe all of these other, you know, stories that are like, well, if he did it one time, he probably did it two times. And if he did it four times, he may have done it eight times. And now you can hear this story after eight convictions and say, well, yeah, this is normal behavior for this guy. This is the first allegation. This is the first accuser. And if there are other women with similar stories, they really haven't come to light yet. And the story's been out there for 2 years. We haven't heard of more people come out saying that they were sexually assaulted by Matt Lauer. They do have stories of him having consensual relationships that he shouldn't have had, much like Dave Letterman had, by the way, for years at CBS, and nobody seemed to say anything about that. He kept his job. He apologized and moved on with his career. Charlie Rose. Everyone is saying that Charlie Rose was aggressive. They said no. Nothing was done about it. There are, like, you know, 15 women that say Charlie Rose did inappropriate things. But the Matt Lauer rape allegation, this is the first one that we've heard publicly. And these details just don't, you know, are very difficult, I think, in a court to be able to convict someone on. Why would you choose this person as the poster child?
Well, and as far as that locking thing on his door, this is what Lauer said in his open letter. Despite numerous erroneous reports in the past, there was not a button in my office that could lock the door from the inside. There was no such locking mechanism. It didn't exist. NBC confirmed this fact publicly.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Following my termination. That's what Lauer says in his letter.
Then, hey, I stand corrected. The New York article. So that's what, like, 4 different allegations in the New Yorker that Matt Lauer refutes and says that he can prove that aren't true. So how many stories, how many fabrications can you have in your story before you just take the whole story and say, well, I mean, you're wrong on 4 factoids here, 4 points. And this does change the where in the world is Matt Lauer contest that NBC News was doing for a long time. Remember that?
Where in the world is Matt Lauer? It is coming up on 325 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Bowerly and Bellavia with you on the radio. Talking right now about this Matt Lauer story. Matt Lauer accused of rape in a very aggressive way. Matt Lauer has thrown a counterpunch, and like I said, the ramifications of this are enormous, because anybody from your past could come forward and say, well, yes, I had a 2-year relationship with him. I had a year-long relationship with him. But that night, it wasn't consensual. That night, he was a rapist. But I continued to see him after that, and I really tried to rekindle the affair, even though he was a rapist.
I will be the witness to say that everything that Tom Bowerly Googled just for HR purposes was a part of this story.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. If I'm called on the carpet for HR for some of the search terms I had to put in, that will be a valid explanation.
That will be backed up in a court of law.
26 minutes after 3 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Bowerly and Bellavia, News Radio 930 WBEN. I suddenly feel very small. Anyway, it is 3:35. We have so much to get into today. And one of the things that, moving on from the Matt Lauer story, which is, David, I'm sorry, but I can't get it out of my mind that could be anybody in the entire world who has ever been in a relationship with anybody that did not end well. Anybody could step forward and say, well, yes, I was with him. I was with her for a year. I was with him. I was with her for 6 months. Of course, we had a relationship after I had the horrible fortune of being sexually assaulted by this person, but I continued it, and it was a transactional relationship. Like I said, I'm sitting on a jury. The minute I hear that, and if he can prove, if Matt Lauer can prove that the affair continued consensually after the alleged assault on Brooke Nevels, and that she tried to rekindle the affair via telephone call, and I can prove that through phone records, at least a call was made, you know, I'd have a real hard time convicting Matt Lauer or awarding any damages to the person who stayed in this transactional relationship with him, despite the fact that the first encounter was allegedly a sexual assault.
It certainly is a problem for an attorney. It makes your job much more difficult. Again, we've seen this documented where, you know, people have been victims of sexual assault that, you know, for whatever reason, psychologically, they continue to be in these relationships. It's not saying that this is impossible. It's just very difficult to prove. And it's probably not the best witness you want to lead off everything. Because once you have a trial or a civil trial and you get Matt Lauer to get a let's put it this way. How many times is the public going to sit through a Harvey Weinstein jury when everything's getting thrown out of court? Eventually, the public's going to say, well, what is it? If it's so black and white, if it's so egregious, why can't you get anything to stick? You know, nobody likes Harvey Weinstein. He's not a popular person. So why is it that you're not able to convince a jury?
Yeah. And I just think this is something to keep in mind whenever we're reporting on anybody, whether it's Brett Kavanaugh or Matt Lauer or Joe Schmo. I mean, there are, you know, I guess some lawyer once said that one of the first things they teach you in law school is that there are two sides to every story. And sometimes there's more than two sides to every story. And she has hers, he has his. Based on the evidence, which do you find more credible?
This is a tough one, but again, I could have been much better without reading any of this.
Oh, it's it does make for pretty glum reading. There's nothing titillating about it. It is just it's raw, it's brutal, it is it's very emotional. I mean, I kind of feel sorry for Matt Lauer. If Matt Lauer has been victimized by a smear by somebody who he ghosted, somebody who might consider herself to be scorned. You know, this is one of the great injustices of the modern media era.
Well, let's slow down, though. I mean, this story might just be that, where it's just fabricated and it's made up. But there are at least 15 other allegations against Matt Lauer that are equally creepy. And there was gossip and hearsay about how he was, you know, saying horrible things when cameras were off to his coworkers, to other female employees. There were other quote-unquote relationships that he had. None of them were legal in his under his responsibilities as an employee of NBC Universal.
In terms of sexual assault, though, Matt Lauer has said in this open letter that he has never had sex with anybody that was not consensual, period. You know, trying, I would imagine, to put the kibosh on future allegations that might be made against him that he was a non-consensual individual. And the woman involved in the initial assault in Sochi, Russia, she says that she was too drunk at the time to give consent to Matt Lauer to do what he did, specifically what he did. But Matt Lauer says at no time was she anything but a cheerfully willing participant in it. So, I mean, basically, it's one of those things where you can take your choice whom you are going to believe and, you know, where does the evidence point? Does the evidence point to Matt Lauer being the victim of a smear? Does the evidence point to Matt Lauer being victim to Matt Lauer being a victimizer? And a harasser. Where does the evidence go? We haven't seen, I haven't seen anything else in terms of specifics about Lauer's behavior detailed in quite the way that this is detailed in his new book.
But again, I just have to go back to Rowan Farrell and just ask, why should you have any, there should be no factoid in your smoking gun article that should be refuted later on. If you didn't know that Matt Lauer had a button at his desk, why did you lead with that? If you couldn't confirm that you knew, if your witness didn't know where they were, but remembers every aspect of an alleged sexual assault in the Kavanaugh case, why would you lead with that witness? If there's 55 people out there that see that Kavanaugh was, you know, doing horrible things when he was in college, why not go with the one that has the actual story? Right. Why do you lead with people that are confused, conflicted, or, you know, don't remember?
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how this thing works out. You know, you mentioned Harvey Weinstein, and this may be one of the worst segues of all time. But Hollywood, you know, it has obviously, David, horrible transition. It has obviously a lot of competition these days. You've got Netflix, you've got Amazon, and do I really need to go through the list? HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, or as some would say, Skinemax. It's got a lot of competition, and I'm not sure how often members of this audience go to the movies, but a movie that is drawing pretty big crowds right now, David, to say the least, and is receiving, from what I've seen, pretty much rave reviews is Joker. And I wonder, you know, if you guys have seen Joker, would you recommend Joker to a friend? You want to set the stage? Is Joker any good? Does Joker live up to the hype? Or when watching Joker, did you suddenly have the urge to become a mass murderer? 803-0930 is the phone number, *930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. It's about a two-hour movie. And, David, one of the politicians somewhere is, I think, is a politician or it's a lawyer. Somebody is throwing down to the movie industry that they start listing the actual times the movies start instead of, like, okay, a 6:30 start time, but the main feature, we don't get to see it until 7 o'clock.
Yeah, you know, that I got to tell you, so when it comes to, you know, your children, you obviously are going to movies that you never dreamed or wanted to ever go to, ever, you know. If you've seen Mr. Popper's Penguins more than three times in a theater, you have children, or you have a restraining order, one of the two. But I can assure you that there are many films out there that you have to collect all the kids. You got to make sure you've got all the stuff going on, the, you know, whatever you're doing to make it a family venture. You roll out to a theater because you want to hit the 6:35 start time, and the movie doesn't get going until, like, you know, 7:20. What's that? I mean, that's totally unacceptable.
It is. I wish this guy, whoever is doing this, whether it's a lawsuit or whether it's legislation, I'm not sure. But I hope that this guy is successful, because I can't stand sitting there during the previews thinking to myself, yeah, you know, I could have hit the men's room before this. Or, geez, I could have gotten myself popcorn.
When you go to a Sabres game and you're coming out of work and you've got all these things going on to find parking, maybe you want to change, maybe you want to put your jersey on, whatever the case may be. And you know, mess your schedule around to get to a Sabres game, only to find out that you're watching the pre-skate, I'd be a little upset that I had an hour and 10 minutes that I could have burned, you know, maybe getting out of a suit, or maybe, you know, finding a better parking spot, or whatever the case may be. Although an hour and 10 minutes before the game, you might have the best parking spot. Who knows?
But, I mean, just think about it.
A snack, a beer, something.
But, I mean, you go to a Bills game, and it starts right around the time it is supposed to start. You go to a Sabres game,
right,
and it starts when it is supposed to start. A baseball game. I mean, David, before the show, I mean, as somebody who's thrown out the first pitch at some major league ceremonies, I mean, when the first pitch is scheduled is when the ceremonial first pitch actually happens, right?
That is right. So you know that you're at least watching 10 minutes of anthem, and you know, but you're not getting there for the introduction of the teams. You're not getting there to watch a bunch of grounds crewmen, you know, line the bases. You're getting there for the game.
I mean, on the other hand, I really don't mind seeing the previews of coming attractions, but I think that the movie theaters ought to show them after the main feature. Hey, if you like this movie, look what's coming up.
Well, listen, that's an industry that's really hemorrhaging money right now, and you know, those features are a huge part of their pre-sales.
No, it's, you know, it's a cross promotion of the industry within the industry to a captive audience. When I saw Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, I remember being in a hurry. I think I forget whether I Ubered there or whether I drove myself there, but Bohemian Rhapsody, saw that, and I remember being in a big hurry to get to the movie theater, and then feeling like, what did I do this for? As I sat through 20 minutes of previews.
Well, listen, depending on the movie, sometimes the preview is actually more important than the film itself. I mean, if it's Star Wars or if it's an Avengers movie, that first preview of that movie is like viral. People are constantly talking about, hey, there's 5 minutes of Luke Skywalker coming back and fighting whoever. And, you know, those guys that follow those movies, they love it. They'll go to the preview and then go home.
So what do you, I mean, you've got some connections out in Hollywood. You're a movie guy, you're a theater major, which a lot of people don't realize, which is pretty extraordinary given some of your other achievements, which, I don't know, they just escaped my memory right now. But what have you been hearing about Joker? I've been hearing nothing but good about that movie from a wide variety of people, including Rex Reed.
Well, you know, from the folks that I've talked to that saw the movie, it's a movie about mental illness, you know, and not knowing what the original, you know, the creators of the DC universe, I don't think, you know, Joker was meant to be a crazy person who stares at matches all day. You know, but it's a deep dive into the psychosis of if this was a real person, what would they really be like?
Right.
And some of that's disturbing. And a lot of people are disturbed by this film. And they call it, you know, the taxi driver of this generation, which is a pretty high praise, which is another good movie about mental illness. You know, how what this guy's thinking, what he wants to do, why he does it. And, you know, Joaquin Phoenix is getting a tremendous amount of buzz. And it seems like everyone who plays Joker gets, you know, Heath Ledger got the Oscar. Can you give two Oscars away to the different people playing the same character?
Sure, why not? Different performer, different
movie.
Haven't
seen it, you know.
Yeah, maybe history will be made.
Right.
Not that anybody in our audience watches the Oscars or the Academy Awards,
and not
anymore.
That it matters either to sales. No one's going to see Avatar because of the best animation CGI that it won for. But look, it's disturbing people at the same time. You know, they're looking at mental illness and saying, you know, this isn't anything to be excited about.
You know, David, it's funny you mentioned Taxi Driver because obviously with what we have going on, with entertainment avenues that we can access right at home, I tried to get into Taxi Driver and I just couldn't. Despite his politics, I like Robert De Niro, the actor, and I just couldn't find myself getting into it. Maybe I didn't give it enough time. I mean, the first few times, believe it or not, I tried watching The Godfather, the wedding scene, put me to sleep before I got to the good stuff. And that was like three or four times. And I could never figure out what was so great about The Godfather until I gave it a little bit more time. And then I realized, wow, this is actually the perfect movie. Maybe they could have cut back the opening wedding scene, but it is important in establishing context of The Godfather character, as well as Sonny Corleone and all of the personalities of the stars of the movie that we're about to watch over the next few hours.
You know, the other thing too is that these are, you know, really brilliant filmmakers, and back in a time in the 70s when you were making these movies, it really was about the journey of the story. You know, cinema has just changed to the point where if you don't have a explosion or a crash or someone murdered in the first 10 minutes, it's not even worth it.
Yeah, you gotta
get bored.
Do the scene setter and then suck them in.
Right. And so Scorsese's that type of filmmaker. Now if you watch like Casino, totally different movie than, you know, Goodfellas or something. It's just a more modern look at, you know, how those types of gangster movies are played. The new one, The Irishman, it's 3 hours long.
I can't wait.
But it looks like it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait. And, you know, guys, do you, when it comes to movies, are you going to the movies or do you wait until you can access them at home through whatever avenue you choose to access them? And
why would you buy a $3,000 TV and a $2,000 sound system and a $3,000 couch unless you wanted to sit on it all the time? And I mean, I just don't know why people would invest in all of the. I mean, Netflix isn't cheap when you have, you know, kids and Amazon and everything. If you got every movie thing out there, that's more. And cable, that's like $500 a month.
Absolutely. Stay with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. We will take some telephone calls from Use guys. I did say Use. We're going to have another cash code word for you coming up right after the news at 4 o'clock here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Right now, asking you guys, as far as the movies go, how in the world, do you guys go to the movies? Have you seen Joker? Would you recommend that we see Joker? Do you wait until the movies come out and you can watch them at home? How are you getting your movies? I mean, a lot of people, and if you don't go to the movies, why don't you go to the movies? I'm just kind of curious because, you know, when I've asked this question before, I mean, before David was co-hosting the show, it amazed me how many people had not been to a movie in like a million years. And yet, when I drive by some of the theaters, if there's something really good showing or something that people think is really good, there's definitely a shortage of parking and no shortage of cars in the parking lot, despite the alternative ways that you can access movies. The phone number on WBEN is 803-0930, 803-0930, star 930. Is your cell number, and 1-800-616-WBEN is the toll-free number. David, getting back to the Irishman, which opens on November 22nd, Do you think it is going to be the wave of the future because they're using digital technology to age, and to euthanize, to make look more youthful, Robert De Niro? Are we going to see more and more of that?
We've seen it in the past. This just happens to be really, really good. You know, it's the first time that this. It's actually a video game software that they're doing when they scan people's faces and put them in video games. They're doing it to bring people back in time. If you remember, you know, in the old days, it might have been a mustache or a different hair, you know, dye or whatever, but it was still a 70-year-old man trying to play a 30-year-old himself. Now, it, you know, that looks like De Niro in Godfather 2. It really does. He looks very young with those pictures we've seen.
And it saves costs on acting, too, on actors.
Exactly.
Don't have to hire the younger Robert De Niro.
When will the stand-ins start getting acknowledged? You know, like the guy who plays King Kong or the guy who plays the CGI character like Jar Jar Binks. Do they get, you know, because that is their facial response. King
right.
Kong is a real person that they made into a gorilla, but the way that they move their face is that person's acting.
Yeah, with people who do things we don't appreciate, like the Surrey lady who That's had to record
right.
all those words. It is coming up on 356 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Yes, the Godfather does insist upon itself.